Anything good needs a little editing, right? I'm Daniela Fierro, producer of Vermont Edition. We've edited this podcast for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening to our show.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lafrac. President Donald Trump kicked off his second term by signing dozens of executive orders around immigration, inflation, the federal workforce, and more. In doing so, he fulfilled many of his campaign promises. But there are still lots of question marks around what President Trump and his new administration will do next. Will he institute high tariffs on the U.S.'s key trading partners like Mexico and Canada? These decisions could significantly impact our northern border and our regional economy. Later in the show, we'll discuss U.S.-Canada relations with an award-winning Ottawa-based journalist. But first, Democratic Congresswoman Becca Ballant joins us from Washington, D.C. She is Vermont's sole representative to the U.S. House. She was elected to a second term this past November, and she spent yesterday at the presidential inauguration of Donald Trump. Representative Ballant, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much, Michaela. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can indeed. Thank you for being with us. Representative, many people, as you know, chose to skip the inauguration, including progressive Democrat Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and former First Lady Michelle Obama. And ahead of today's show, we heard from some folks in this region who think that you and the rest of our delegation should have as well. Mary in Winchester, New Hampshire, for example, writes, "Why did you and the Vermont delegation think it was important to attend the inauguration of a president who is already causing great damage to our country?" So, yeah, that's my question to you. Did you ever consider skipping the inauguration?
No, I never did, because I made a promise to my constituents that I would attend the inauguration regardless of who won. I think it's very important that Vermonters understand that I respect the vote of the people, that I respect the Constitution. And although I was certainly not happy with the outcome of the election, and I did not enjoy being at the inauguration, it is so important that we send a message that you don't just honor the vote when your person wins. And I understand that people chose to skip, and you know, folks have their own reasons for making the decisions that they did. I also had somebody ask me a few weeks ago, you know, what would you say to Trump supporters? And what I say to Trump supporters is, whatever frustration I have with Donald Trump and this administration is not frustration I have with Vermonters, whether you voted for Donald Trump or whether you have voted for Kamala Harris. I am here ready to do the work to defend our Constitution, to support the rule of law, and to work tirelessly for Vermonters, regardless of party. And I think it was important for me to be there also as a witness that there's something very powerful of sitting in a room, watching someone commit, promise, take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. And so I'm going to hold him to that. I'm going to hold J.D. Vance to that. But it is important to witness these things and not pretend they're not happening. I am not going to be somebody who turns away from the challenges ahead. And I want Vermonters to know I'm approaching this with calm and with focus. And it's so important for me to be able to say, hey, through channels, you know, to the White House, you stood up at the Rotunda in front of the world and promised to protect and defend the Constitution. And then later in the very same day, you defied the 14th Amendment and tried to take away birthright citizenship. So the witnessing of it is important. It doesn't mean that I am somehow an apologist or an enabler, but Donald Trump is the president and this is the administration. And so we have to figure out how to hold them accountable, to hold them to the rule of law and support the Constitution, while also figuring out how do I get work done on behalf of Vermonters. And if I might, one of the things that was so shocking to me in the speech yesterday, given all of the messages that Trump and J.D. Vance got on the campaign trail about costs, we heard nothing about our nationwide housing shortage. We didn't hear anything about how we're going to lower prescription drugs. In fact, yesterday, part of the executive orders was rescinding a Biden executive order that was specifically targeting lowering prescription drugs. And so you got to hold people accountable. And in order to do that, you have to be paying attention to the important things.
I'm glad you brought up housing, Representative Ballings. That was one of the things I wanted to ask you about today. A few weeks ago, you spoke with my colleague Bob Kinzel and reflected on your first term as Vermont's Congresswoman. And you noted that you were really proud of a piece of legislation that you had introduced, the Community Housing Act, that would have invested $500 billion in developing new housing all across the country, including here in Vermont. That bill did not pass. Now, Republicans' majority in the House has shrunk for this next Congress, but they still have control of the chamber. So I'm curious if you're going to reintroduce the Community Housing Act this Congress, and if so, are there changes you're going to make in an effort to actually get it through?
I really appreciate that question. And as you pointed out, yes, we are still in the minority. And when you are in the minority, you have a responsibility to try to find partners across the aisle who are interested, perhaps not even in your entire package, in my case, in this housing bill, but looking at ways in which we can collaborate. I know that there are Republicans who are very alarmed by the kind of price fixing that has gone on around rents across the nation. That's a part of my bill is dealing with that. I know that there are representatives who, you know, I hate using the blue state, red state thing because there are, constituents of every political stripe in all of our districts, but people who represent more red-leaning districts who also are having a housing crisis right now. And so there is an opportunity here. And Donald Trump actually, in the last few months of the campaign, did talk about the need for housing. What is that going to look like? We have to continue. As I said, this is the challenging part, Michaela, and this is the piece that I know is hard for a lot of folks right now. We have to continue to try to do our work, even if it means partnering with some people on the other side of the aisle that we disagree with vehemently on other things, when it will materially make life better for Vermonters. That doesn't mean upending the Constitution or violating the rule of law, but it does mean talking about common cause that we have. And I believe housing is one of them. I still believe prescription drugs is one of them. Certainly mental health supports. These are things that all Americans need right now. And so you asked about changes we might make. My team is very much in the middle of that work right now, talking to not just our housing partners in Vermont, but also really making those connections with other members of Congress who have other bills that might be something, you know, a small piece of work that we can get attached to a larger bill that is moving. So that is all going to become much more clear in the weeks and months ahead, but it is still one of my top priorities. It is a very difficult situation across Vermont right now, not just the cost of housing, but the supply. Mm. So we are very much focused on that.
Well, listeners, we have Representative Becca Ballant with us for about another 10 minutes. If you have a question for her, you can call in now at 800-639-2211. We got an email from Barbara in Montpelier who says, kudos to Representative Ballant for attending the inauguration and witnessing. Good example. Representative, President Trump said yesterday that I'm quoting here.
Yeah.
He said, it will henceforth be the official policy of the United States government that there are only two genders, male and female. As a queer member of Congress and someone who has spoken out repeatedly on behalf of trans Americans, how did that statement hit you? And what does it mean exactly for people, trans people today?
Oh, my gosh. The damage is profound. There is the emotional and psychological damage from watching your own government be weaponized against you. And there is real concern about what this will mean for healthcare going forward, for protections regarding employment and housing, right? So there are both the emotional and psychological pain that my community is experiencing, and there is also real fear that people are going to be unable to get the healthcare that they both need and deserve. And, you know, more broadly, this obsession that the Republican Party seems to have right now against trans people across this country, trans Americans, is, in my mind, a profound and craven and cruel distraction from the real work that we have to do to make life better for Americans. They have created a scapegoat of people who are just trying to live their lives. And, you know, I have gotten to be close with Sarah McBride, who is the member of Congress from Delaware, newly elected, first member of the trans community to be elected in Congress. And what is so incredibly difficult for me to watch in real time are the ways in which she is being routinely disrespected and harassed by other members of Congress, and the Speaker of the House, who is supposed to be a speaker for all, does nothing about it. So I want folks in Vermont who have a member of their family who is trans, or if you are trans, or if you are just someone who is a deeply compassionate person who understands what this is all about, it is really important that you are a source of light for folks in your community, and you understand that you are not going to let them to be demonized and dehumanized. But we also, once again, cannot continue to take the bait. They introduce these horrible bills and these executive orders to distract us from the fact they have no plan. They have no plan on reducing costs for Americans, which was basically the number one issue that folks voted on. And none of that was laid out. And so I am going to continue to point out to both my constituents, whether you supported Donald Trump or not, that we have a right to ask for the work that we do in Congress to be consequential work on behalf of Americans that makes life better. And I do not see how a mean-spirited, demonizing executive order of this kind does anything to truly serve the American people.
We're speaking with Vermont's sole representative to Congress, Becca Ballant, a Democrat. Congresswoman, you mentioned just now that the Trump administration has not outlined a clear plan for reducing costs for Americans. One thing that they have done is propose some pretty strict tariffs on the United States' lead trading partners, including Mexico and Canada. And I want to ask you about this because we'll be focusing on it for the rest of today's show. Just yesterday, President Trump said his administration was going to impose 25% tariffs on Mexico and Canada on February 1st. And his goal here, in part, is to promote the domestic economy. But critics say that these tariffs could ultimately raise prices for American consumers. I'm wondering if you could help explain to me and to our listeners the role that Congress plays, if any, in this imposition of tariffs and these trade deals. What comes next for you in this arena?
Yeah, so a couple things. You know, we obviously have really strong trading partners in both Canada and Mexico. And the proposal that the Trump administration has put forward is a 25% tariff on goods from Mexico and Canada. And I just, you know, I want to highlight for Vermonters, this also includes things like power that we might get from Hydro-Quebec. Okay. So it has all kinds of ramifications and impacts on Vermonters that will only become clear the more, you know, the longer these are put into place. These are not this is the part that's so difficult right now to reframe this so that people truly understand who's paying these costs. Mexico and Canada are not going to be paying these. These are tariffs being charged to businesses who are selling these products, and those costs will get passed on to us. So it is an interesting choice that President-elect Trump made on the campaign trail, and now President Trump in his first day in office, to be using tariffs as a way for us to get out of whatever economic stressors Americans are feeling. This is going to make products more expensive for Vermonters. And I am hoping that cooler heads will prevail on the budget committee that I serve on, and in other committees that certainly the Ways and Means Committee that deals with taxation, cooler heads on his side of the aisle to say, this is not going to help the people that you promised you would help in terms of lowering prices. And so I'm very concerned about this specifically as it relates to whatever agreements that we have with Canada in regard to energy prices. I know that's something that it could be very hurtful to Vermonters' pocketbooks. And I will do everything that I can to make the case that this is not helping. It's not the way for us to lower prices for people.
Mm. Congresswoman Becca Ballen, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate your time. As he campaigned for a second term, president-elect at that point, now President Donald Trump, repeatedly warned that one of his goals was to impose a 25% tariff on everything imported to the U.S. from Canada. In response, the Canadian government has promised to impose tariffs of its own on U.S. goods. Yesterday, as President Trump signed executive orders in the Oval Office, he gave a clear timeline for the rollout of these tariffs.
We're thinking in terms of 25% on Mexico and Canada because they're allowing vast numbers of people. Canada's a very bad abuser also. Vast numbers of people to come in and fentanyl to come in.
When do you think you would enact those?
I think February 1st.
Are you planning on giving notice of that?
I think we'll do it February 1st.
25% on both, sir?
Sir.
On each.
How will this new era of U.S.-Canada relations look? And what could these tariffs mean for our region's international economy, border security, the drug crisis, and overall relations with Vermont's northern neighbors? Joining us to discuss is David Akin. He's the chief political correspondent for the outlet Global News. David is a longtime award-winning journalist who covers Canadian federal and electoral politics. He's based in Ottawa, but today he joins us from Washington, D.C. David, welcome.
Yeah, good to be here. Good to listen to that chat with Representative Ballen. She sounds like an ally for Canada. For all the politicians I've been talking to, Canadian politicians, there's a lot of them down here in Washington for the inauguration. That's why I'm here. And if they haven't met Representative Ballen, I'm going to point them to her. She sounds like an ally for many Canadian politicians.
Well, I'm glad Vermont Edition can help create connections in our region. So, David, you were down in D.C. covering the inauguration, yes?
Yeah, it is cold down here. Of course, everybody was inside, so I was mostly covering it, watching it on television. But also, as I mentioned, there are two members of Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's cabinet came down here. Typically, you see cabinet-level representatives at an inauguration. You may know that I think for the first time ever in American history, the head of a foreign government attended, and that was Argentina's Javier Milei was here. But typically, Canada sends a minister. And in this case also, the Premier of Alberta, Danielle Smith, she's still here. She's in the middle of 5 days of meetings in Washington, and all sorts of business groups from Canada, Canadian Chambers of Commerce, provincial Chambers of Commerce. They're all here meeting with their business counterparts, trade associations, etc. All to essentially, as Representative Ballen just mentioned, a tariff is paid by the importing country. It's a tax. The External Revenue Service, should it be created, will be collecting taxes from the same people the Internal Revenue Service collects taxes from, and that is Americans. It's not Canadians who are going to pay the Trump tariffs. It's going to be Americans. And absolutely, that's the message right across the board from every Canadian politician, doesn't matter the political stripe, is Trump is proposing to raise prices on, particularly for Vermonters, on lots and lots of on things, particularly energy. I just looked it up. Vermont imports, you know, $700 million worth of energy, electricity, a year, mostly from Quebec. And, you know, add 25% to that. Think of your hydro bill going up 25%. That is what your president is proposing, all in the names of lowering inflation. Hmm. It's hard to square that circle.
Well, there's also, Canada has also said that if the U.S. imposes tariffs, they will retaliate by doing the same, which could then raise prices for Canadians as well, correct?
Yes, exactly. And there's some discussion among Canadian politicians about whether retaliatory tariffs are a good idea, precisely because of that, because you do hurt your own home consumer with those. Obviously, Americans and Canadians for, you know, a couple of centuries have been great friends, great trading partners. We've through multiple administrations, tried to reduce trade barriers, knowing that we have, you know, Vermont-Quebec ties are strong, people-to-people ties are strong. But the current government in Ottawa, the Trudeau government, and we can talk probably, there's a lot going on.
There's a lot going on up there. We'll talk about it.
But whether it's the Trudeau government or it is a successor government, led probably by the Conservative Party, they too are committed to retaliatory tariffs. Now, I mentioned Danielle Smith from Alberta, and she's an important character in the Canadian national debate on this, because she is the only senior political leader who says, no, we should not be retaliating with tariffs. I'd be a bit more fair. So does the Saskatchewan Premier Scott Moe. They favor diplomacy. They hope that the tariffs that are imposed on Canadian imports will essentially work their magic when Americans wake up and go, holy cow, the cost to fill up the car, the cost of electricity to heat your home has all gone up because of these tariffs, that would put enough political pressure on the president to drop them. So that there's definitely debate going on that. But just this morning, the prime minister is meeting with his cabinet in Quebec, and he came out with a press conference and said that the government of Canada is prepared to go dollar for dollar on any tariffs. And you're right, it's going to hurt people on both sides of the border.
Mm. Well, we want to hear from you, our listener, about what you think of these proposed tariffs on Canada and Mexico as well. How could they affect our region or perhaps your own costs that you're dealing with, maybe energy or your business that caters to tourists from Canada? Call in. Tell us how you're thinking through this. 800-639-2211 is our number. You can also email vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. We have Dave on the line in Wilmington, Vermont. David, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think what the president is looking for is more cooperation with the drugs and the illegals coming across the borders. I think he would be willing to make better deals, maybe not impose as much tariffs if the Canadian government would be willing to cooperate with the border control.
Hmm. Yeah, thanks, David, for calling in. And yeah, as we heard in the clip that we played at the top of this segment, President Trump said that Canada is allowing too many people to cross the border without permission, and also allowing illegal drugs like fentanyl over the border. And that's part of his reason for proposing these high tariffs. I wonder if you could speak to that aspect a bit, David.
You're absolutely right. When this idea was first proposed, David's got it correct that Trump is worried about He's clearly worried about security on both the northern and southern border. There's no question about that. But as Canadian politicians are trying to make the case, they're not the same kind of border. I'm pretty sure Vermonters know that the northern border is nothing like the problems that exist on the southern border. In fact, if there's a problem of illegal migrants on the northern border, it's people coming illegally from Vermont into Quebec more than people coming from Quebec into Vermont. And that is a message that the politicians in Canada are trying to mention. As for fentanyl, it's a scourge in Canada, and Canadian politicians would love to make Fortress North America strong against fentanyl coming from China or wherever else, and are prepared to work with the American administration to do more interdiction, et cetera. The Canadian government a couple of weeks ago announced it was going to spend an extra $1.5 billion to beef up border security, and that would include purchasing some helicopters, for example, to be able to quickly spot borders. So again, the message that Ottawa is sending to Washington is that we're 100% aligned on that. We want to tighten up the border, but also trying to mention that I think the stat is less than 0.5% of the fentanyl that comes in the United States comes across the northern border. It's coming from somewhere else. The problem is not really Canada as a source of fentanyl. And as for irregular migration, illegal migration, same thing. Very small number of people are trying to cross the border into from Canada into the United States. And in fact, as we've seen again, the Roxham Road, Quebec, Vermont corridor, during the Trump's first administration, I'm sure you guys probably did stories on this, there was a lot of people, particularly Muslim Canadians, who were worried that Trump was going to expel them. And so they came up to Canada trying to claim asylum. And this time around, the Canadian government is also worried about an exodus of people. We know that President Trump yesterday announced some tough new immigration orders that wants to deport people. And the Canadian government is worried that there's going to be a lot of people who are in America now, think they're going to be deported, and they're going to try to come up to Canada. And they're going to find that the border is much tougher now. It's not going to be possible to walk across the border. You're going to be turned around and sent right back to the United States. So lots has happened since President Trump was last in charge in the White House. And he will find many Canadian allies are absolutely with him on the need to fight fentanyl and the need to tighten border. But the message also is raising tariffs ain't the idea. And here's the other thing, Mikayla, too. If you listen to that speech yesterday, one of the things he said was, we're going to make America rich again by taxing foreign countries. So is it a revenue? Is he in this for the revenue, or is he in it because he's concerned about security? Probably a mix of both, but he certainly can't be in it for the revenue because, again, as I mentioned, a tariff is a tax on Americans. It's not a tax that Canadians will pay.
Well, while we're on the subject of the border and people crossing the border without documents, some stats to share from the Montreal Gazette. There were about 26,000 of these illegal crossings that occurred from north to south in 2024, and about 19,000 of those took place in that Swanton sector that runs through Vermont, New Hampshire, and parts of New York State. And I believe the Quebec government just announced that it's upping some security in that region, kind of in anticipation of Trump's focus on the region.
Yep, absolutely. So again, and so did the other major government in this major subnational government is the government of Ontario. Ontario's got its own provincial police force, so does Quebec. And absolutely, the premiers of both provinces have put more funding into their police forces, are looking for more funding from the federal government to beef up the border. So again, everybody on the north part of the border is seized with making that border secure. The other thing that has to happen, though, is, and you guys have so many border crossings with Quebec, we want to make sure that, commercial traffic can still get through, the people going to work on either side of the border, that we don't cause economic harm to either country by going over the top with border security. In Canada, we call that thickening the border. We don't want a thickened border. We want a thinner border, but it's got to be strong and preventing illegal drugs, illegal weapons. That's another, we haven't mentioned that if there's illegal guns on the streets in Montreal or in Toronto, they're generally, according to the police forces in Canada, they're coming from the States. And that's been a big problem for decades, is weapons traffic from the United States, where, of course, it's a lot easier to acquire guns than it is to Canada, where it's a lot more difficult to acquire a gun. So the bad guys of the world tend to make a very good living taking guns they've got in the United States and smuggling them up into Canada and selling them to other bad guys.
Mm. Well, we're speaking right now with David Akin, who is a journalist based in Ottawa for Global News. He's joining us right now from Washington, D.C., though, where he has been covering the inauguration. Let's take some calls here, David. We have Jonathan calling in from Marlborough. That is always a town name I cannot say. Jonathan, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hi there.
It's Marl. It's Marlboro.
Yeah, it doesn't come out right every time I try it. I'll practice off air.
just by thinking of the RL, all right. It'll come out. Anyway,
thank you. Go ahead. What are your thoughts on our conversation on tariffs today?
Well, I'm about to get a delivery of pellets for the winter, of wood pellets. I have a wood boiler, a pellet boiler, and I had never, it never had crossed my mind that anything about the tariffs would affect me. But the pellets that I have bought in the past, and I'm about to buy this week, come from Canada. And if this tariff goes through, I'll be spending 25% more on my heating bill next year as compared to this year. And that's a big deal.
Thank you, Jonathan. And I do just want to clarify, the U.S. is suggesting imposing a 25% tariff on Canadian goods. It doesn't exactly correlate with a 25% increase in prices. It's kind of up to the businesses who have to pay these tariffs, how much they're going to pass down to the consumer. But it could lead to an increase in prices, just as you're saying. David Akin, did I summarize that correctly?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, we have spent a lot of time in our news organization, just not me, but colleagues across our country, talking to business owners about how they're going to do this. And 25% tariff is simply too large to absorb into, I think, most businesses' costs, particularly those, I would say, in any kind of the energy business. Margins are typically around 5% or so for a lot of those business owners. So they're going to have to pass them on to the customer. And I'd be really interested in that pellet story because, you know, I've traveled a lot in Vermont and I'm pretty sure you guys got a lot of forests and you've got your own wood. But what often happens in our integrated economy, I'll bet those pellets might have been manufactured in Quebec, but they might have been used Vermont wood. The raw wood might have gone up to a mill in Quebec and it comes back down in some processed fashion. I mean, I don't know specifically, but there's a lot of products like that. We talk about the auto sector, which of course is really big, a really big business in Ontario. You know, parts are going to go back and forth between Ontario, Michigan, Ohio, you know, five or six times before they end up in a vehicle. I know that one of the big exports that Vermont has, I think, is, you know, semiconductor electrical components. And I didn't know this until this week, but 85% of the semiconductors made in the United States are actually packaged and tested in Canada. So the semiconductors are made in the States, they come up to Canada, they're packaged, and then when they come back down, well, they should be subjected to a tariff. And if there's tit for tat tariffs, then they'll be tariffed on the way into Canada. And
speaking of things that are hard to say, David.
Yeah, no kidding. So take a look at, your caller from Marlboro, take a look at the, you know, made in wherever of whatever good you're buying. And if it's made in China, it's going to, I've talked to some retailers. How about this for an example? Anybody who's listening into model trains, there's a great model train maker named Rapido. Rapido makes high-end model trains that, you know, little locomotives might cost, you know, $1,000. Hobbyists love this stuff. The guy who runs his company is based in Markham, Ontario, just north of Toronto. Now, the trains themselves are made in China. And it's not just him. Every model train by any seller of model trains, they're all made in one province in China. There's no getting around that. Nobody's going to bring the model train makers here. So he imports his model trains to Canada, and then the big bulk of his business is among American hobbyists. So this is tariff central for this owner. So he might have to pay 10% more for the import from China. That's the Trump threat. And now there's going to be a 25% tariff on his product going to his American customers. What is that particular small business doing? It's really hoping that the tariff war, such as it is, will be short. This particular retailer, Rapido Trains, is going to pass on the 10% tariff that he might get charged because it's from China. But what he's told his American customers is, I'm going to hold off shipping anything you order from me if a tariff comes into effect for a few weeks in the hope that this will blow over really quickly. That's his hope. But if it doesn't blow over quickly, then that Canadian retailer is probably going to have to open up operations in the United States to avoid that import. And I think that's just what Trump wants. Where business can, he wants to see a business open up in the United States.
Let's go right back to the phones. We have Nils calling in from Duxbury, who I believe we had on Vermont Edition just a couple weeks ago to talk about the business of building saunas. Nils, what are your thoughts on these proposed tariffs or your question?
Right. Hello, an excellent show. Any builders, contractors, architects, designers, people, housing advocates listening to this show are having their blood boil because this tariff thing with Canadian product imports is really very, very destructive for our economy in this way. Canadian timber companies and mills are subsidized by the Canadian government, which makes it much harder for mills in the U.S. to compete with them. When we add the tariff, it makes that problem worse. I just went to the lumberyard this morning. I bought a bunch of framing material, spruce from out west. All of it came from Canada. So it's not a small thing. We have people in Vermont, nonprofits and government folks, breaking their backs trying to figure out how to deal with affordable housing and homelessness. This is going to be a nightmare. I mean, this is just, it's not great. That's my comment. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, Nils. Appreciate you calling in and providing that perspective from somebody who is involved very closely with the building industry. David, other thoughts there on how these proposed tariffs could affect things like the timber industry or building in both Canada and Vermont?
Yeah, Mills brings up an interesting point because right now there are already tariffs on Canadian softwood lumber that comes in the United States. This has been one of the longest running trade irritants between Canada and the United States. And I know there's many Canadian governments who would take issue with the idea that Canadian mills are subsidized. There is different ways that Canadian harvesters can access Crown land or publicly owned land that's different in the United States. And whatever the ins and outs of who's subsidized or whatever, the Canadian government has taken the United States government to the World Trade Organization, I don't know how many times, 5, 6, and has won every time on the Canadian government's view that there should not be tariffs on Canadian softwood lumber exports. That said, the Biden administration kept the tariffs on lumber exports, and I'm sure the Trump will too. These tariffs have on lumber have been around for a long time. They were there during George Bush's years, et cetera. So long-standing irritant. But again, yep, they're going to be even more expensive. Any lumber coming across from Canada to the border. And I come back to the discussion we had at the beginning of the show with Representative Ballin, talked about, you know, homes and housing and how can we lower costs. Well, there's a lot of wood used to build homes. And so what President Trump is proposing is to make homes for everybody in the United States who builds with Canadian lumber more expensive. And this is, you know, one other thing. I'm sure Vermont lumber, just like lumber in Quebec, in northern climates, I don't know if you know this, but the lumber is stronger. It grows slower. The actual, you know, cells in a bit of wood are a little bit thicker and stronger because of the growing in a cold climate than, say, lumber from Georgia. And builders love Canadian lumber. I'm sure they love Vermont lumber, New Hampshire lumber. Lumber grown in a northern climate tends to be better wood, so I'm told, than lumber grown in, as I say, Georgia.
Well, I'm glad we can get a shout out in for that northern lumber.
Yeah.
I'm sure are proud of it. I want to make sure we have some time to talk about the leadership transition that is happening, is going to continue happening over the next couple months up there in Canada. Now, as most folks in the U.S. have heard, the Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau resigned as the ruling Liberal Party leader. It was a position he's held for nearly a dozen years. He is technically going to remain prime minister until a new leader is chosen. Can you explain a bit more how this process is going to unfold over the next couple months?
Sure. The key thing to know is in a parliamentary democracy like Canada, the leader of the government is the leader of the party that can command, quote, the confidence of the House of Commons or the legislature. And right now, that is the Liberal Party. It is the largest party in the House of Commons. And so its leader generally is going to be the prime minister. So Justin Trudeau is the leader of the Liberal Party, and therefore, he's the prime minister. And yes, he's decided to step aside. He has become tremendously unpopular among all Canadians and eventually very unpopular among his own party members. And so they essentially read him the riot act and told him he had to quit, and he listened. And so he said, okay, you find another leader and I'll quit on the day you find that leader. That leader will be elected on middle of March. There's a couple of candidates running from within his own parliamentary caucus. The leading candidate there will be Chrystia Freeland. Chrystia Freeland was the former finance minister, but quit her job over a dispute with Trudeau. Freeland, by the way, had an op-ed in the Washington Post yesterday warning Americans, you come at us with tariffs, we're coming right back at you. We want to be your friends.
Yeah, can I jump in here, David? Because we have a clip, actually, of Freeland discussing this. I believe it is from over the weekend. She's talking about President Donald Trump.
He wants to steal our jobs and drive away investment. He has spoken clearly and repeatedly about making our Canada the 51st state. Yeah. And he's threatened to use economic coercion to do so.
David, I think if Canada becomes the 51st state, the folks there in Washington, D.C., where you are right now, are going to have something to say about it.
Well, as I say to, I guess, my Republican friends in the United States, Canada's about as progressive as Vermont is. And I don't think there'd be a lot of Republican senators from Canada, let alone Republican representatives. So, that would really tilt the political balance in Washington. But I think it's a non-starter. I think everybody knows it's not going to happen. We want that economic union. We want to be, when I say we, this is it's my personal view, I guess, too, but also the view of the political class from right to left, is Canada wants to be best friends with America. And that's the way it's been for a long time, wants to keep that relationship. I'm sure a lot of Americans feel the same way. We just don't understand why you want to sort of declare this economic war on Canada. That's the message. Let's work through those. So Chrystia Freeland is definitely a leading candidate. The other one is a guy named Mark Carney. Mark Carney used to be the Bank of Canada governor. So he was our central banker, sort of like the chairman of the Fed would be, the analogous position in the United States. And he's such a smart guy. He went from being the Bank of Canada governor to being the governor of the Bank of England. And he was there through Brexit, et cetera, et cetera. So he's a really smart guy, but he's never put his name on a ballot before. And so some people, even though he's got a lot of support among liberals, people are wondering, can he really be a politician? It kind of doesn't matter, though, because for nearly 2 years, the Conservative Party, led by a guy named Pierre Poilievre, it has been 20 points up in the polls. And if there was an election, and there is going to be an election this spring, it's going to be unavoidable. There's going to be a general election. Poilievre would win one, is set to win one of the largest parliamentary majorities in our history. So if you get to know and are paying attention to Canadian politics, you want to probably pay attention to what Pierre Poilievre and the Conservatives are saying. And what they're saying about Trump's tariffs, pretty much what the Trudeau government is saying. Tariffs are coming, retaliatory tariffs will be on their plate as well. They're in favor of open borders. Canada's a trading nation, relies on trade. We're into multilateral agreements, G7s, trans-Pacific partnerships. That would be the Conservative government as well. I don't think there'd be a whole lot of difference in terms of the overall approach to any threat of tariffs.
It's interesting, though, David, because it seems like Pierre Poilievre and the Conservative parties are trying to kind of walk this tightrope between endorsing some of Trump's policies while also acknowledging that President Trump remains this largely unpopular figure in Canada. But there was this really interesting, stream of posts from Elon Musk about Canadian politics on X, which Elon Musk, of course, owns. And he voiced support for Poilievre.
Yeah. So there's no question Poilievre is a conservative. And on some of the culture war issues, we talked about what Trump had to say about genders.
Mm-hmm.
I think there might be some support for that culture war kind of stuff among some of Poilievre's supporters. But Poilievre himself is pro-choice. Poilievre is in favor of same-sex marriage. Poilievre's father, in fact, is in a same-sex relationship, I believe. So he's progressive on some of those, even though his base and some of the people around him may sort of think that the culture wars... I'll tell you, I know people around him think that the Democrats in the United States were wrong to engage Trump on the culture wars. I think conservatives in Canada believe Trump won because of concerns about inflation, affordability, pocketbook issues. And there's a lot of polling to support that that is, in fact, the case. And that is the case that Poilievre is making in Canada. Cost of housing, inflation. He's trying to avoid what I'll call culture war issues. And that's put him 20 points up in the polls. So one small little, I don't know if this will help Canada, but one of Poilievre's members of parliament, one of the MPs from the Conservative Party, is a guy from named Jamil Giovanni. Jamil represents a Toronto area riding. And guess what? Jamil Giovanni and J.D. Vance were best pals at Yale. They both went to Yale together. And Jamil Giovanni's also already been down in Washington. He's had dinner with his old buddy, J.D. Vance. And if there's any sort of back channels that Poilievre can use, I'm sure he would use that one. So there's that tie. That's one person-to-person tie that Poilievre has that he may try to exploit.
Hmm. David, it sounds like you have a lot to report on down there. How much longer are you going to be staying in Washington, D.C.?
Well, it's I use Celsius. I'm hoping Vermonters are okay with Celsius. I could do the conversion.
Try us.
It's minus 10 Celsius here in Washington, and I'm looking forward to getting back to Ottawa tomorrow where it's minus 20 Celsius. But if you've heard of the Rideau Canal, you know, the canal through the city, it's the longest skating rink in the world, as we say. All that cold weather means I'm going to get back and lace up my skates and be going up and down the Rideau Canal. Do come up with your skates if you're ever in Ottawa.
David Aiken is an Ottawa-based journalist, the chief political correspondent for Global News. David, it's been a pleasure talking with you today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Kyle. I enjoyed it.